Than the 20 minutes, we'll see. Great. Should I go now, or are we reading something else, or are you ready to go?
Yes, over to you, Daniela.
Okay,
thank you.
Great. All right. Thanks so much. I'm so happy to be here, and I want to thank Amy and everybody for asking me to come and speak here about one of my favorite. I guess it's like my favorite subject, really. One of my favorite subjects, which is. Has to do with liberation, has to do with freedom, has to do with getting free and in a fellowship like this one. So I just also want to appreciate everybody for being here on this path, whether you're new or longer than me or you know right alongside me. I'm just so happy we're all doing this important work together. And a little bit about me before, in case people don't know much about me, and then I'll get into the nuts and bolts of my experience with columns 3 and the realization. I identify as a chaos creator. My main fellowship is Al-Anon, and for me, BBA isn't particularly a fellowship. It's a work group, or it's like a study group of fellows. And my fellowship is Al-Anon. I think that's important to state. I come from an alcoholic home, so I'm an adult child of alcoholics. But I qualify myself. I don't need any qualifiers. I have been batshit crazy in my life just as much as all the alcoholics and addicts around me. I got to the point in my life, it started pretty young, where I questioned, do I want to live at all? And, I've been seeking relief for the anguish of obsessive, looping, self-hating thoughts, suicidal ideation, and just the misery of, like, trying to get the world to be how I want it to be so that I could be happy, and the ultimate failure that will always bring in the end. I mean, I'll never be able to do that in my experience, no matter how charming I can be or hardworking. And so, seeking for this relief has a long, you know, I've been wanting this freedom. You know, I've tried many things in my life, and they've all had their place, you know, and they've all helped me in some way or another. But what I've come to understand through this program particularly is that it's really only a higher power, you know, my parents, you know, my loving mother God, who can relieve me of the things that ail me. Now, if you're new, that might sound kind of, I mean, it depends, you know, everybody has a different relationship. But there are agnostics, and I am sometimes and have been one of them, which I think it's important to be discerning, you know. That's what I like about this program, is it's about experience. So we're not being asked to do anything on blind faith. And me and myself, as a person who has been brutalized by the hegemonic structures of power under the systems of heteropatriarchy, is what I call it, as a trans person, I am very skeptical of some big group of people telling me what's right and wrong, and I should just believe this and that, because a lot of the things I was taught to believe in childhood didn't have my best interest in mind, to say the least, or to say the worst, wanted me hurt or disappeared or to hide or all these things. So, you know, I come from a pretty fringy kind of perspective, in a sense, or at least I always thought so, you know, that I was somehow exceptionally different. And then what I learned in these rooms, particularly, besides just in my life, in my communities, but it's particularly in the 12 steps, is that I do belong on earth, that I belong here, and that I can trust in a power greater than myself that has my best interest in mind. And it's been the greatest gift of my life to really feel that so solidly as I have, particularly since I've worked the steps within the framework, with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, with the help of Big Book Awakening way of working the steps. That's where I found my greatest freedom. So that's been like the last, I think I started with my step guide in October of 2019. Yeah, so like almost a year and a half now. And so I'm in my ninth step. I'm also strongly in my 10th, 11th, and 12th steps. So I want to get into this thing of the fourth step. So why is it important? you know, living with resentments in my experience. And I define resentments, as it says here and suggested by BBA on the top of page 65. It says, you know, what's hurt or threatened or interfered with me. So I'm the type of Al-Anon that would think, oh, I don't really have resentments. You know, there's a few assholes, but for the most part, I'm a nice person and I don't hold a grudge, which isn't actually true. But also, if I consider resentments as what has hurt, threatened, or interfered with me, then it gets to be a much wider wider thing of you know, possibilities of what, and I can get the work done I need of removing everything that is not my authentic self, which for me, the fourth step in particular is, I mean, this whole process of the 12 steps is, does that, but the fourth steps in a very particular way, just from the start to the finish, I just became, how could I say? I just got a lot more free. Like I said, if the aim is liberation, and that's the aim of my spiritual path, a liberation of all beings and all universes, I think the 12 steps is a great way to do that, because not only do we get help, but we also can help others. But the main guide would be God. So I think enough said about that. If I was going to refer to the book here, I would say we could start on page 64, resentments are the number one offender. It destroys more controller fixers than anything else. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease. I mean, that's a pretty big statement, right? From it stems all forms of spiritual disease. I mean, if we know that that our, you know, physical and mental maladies can be suppressed, we know that the spiritual malady will not be, and it's just a daily reprieve, then we could say that a daily kind of engagement with, if I'm resentful, if I'm feeling hurt, threatened, or interfered with, is going to be my spiritual duties for the day, you know. So that goes in my 10th and 11th, but it goes specifically in the fourth step as I learn what's me and what's not me, you know, because a lot of times all these thoughts feel like they're me, or they feel like ultimate truths. These thoughts about what other people should be doing, or what they're not doing because they should be doing it and they're not doing it, so they're wrong and I'm right. It leads to death, which is, it's pretty wild, but it's freeing ultimately, you know, to realize that. So, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, but we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, I will straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. And in most cases, it was found, and this is where we get into the third column, that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt, threatened, or, and then BBA adds in, interfered with. So we were sore, we were burned up. If for anyone new, I don't know how many people on the call are new and or not, but we get to do this grudge list, which it says here, our grudge list. We set opposite each name our injuries, and then we get to see the different areas of self that are affected, you know. So the way it was framed to me, which I found really helpful when going through writing these down, is if I was if I'm trying to be the actor in the play, but I'm also trying to direct the play, which, you know, you can do. I am an actor, and I have directed myself, but it doesn't really work out very well. It's much better to have someone else up there seeing the bigger view, and especially someone with a huge imagination like God, you know, who can see, have all different possibilities. Then I would look at, let's say, in my case, you know, I resented schools, you know, for a terrible education or whatever, for brutalizing me or whatever I had on there. Schools, and then, sorry, I wanted to find that one. I think it's right here. Sorry, I thought I had it right in front of me, but, okay, bullies in school. Let's take that one, because I was bullied pretty badly in school. So then, you know, the kind of, if I was to make a tagline in a film, I would just say, you know, for bullying me, taunting me, and making my school life hell. So my self-esteem, well, I'm a great person, you know, in it, you know, how I see myself. It's the role I've assigned myself. I'm a great person. And then we get to look at the fear in column 3-2. What's the opposite of being a great person would be would be that I'm not good enough, you know? So then the next would be my pride, like how others should see me, so others should recognize my worth. Well, my fear is that I'm worthless, you know? And then my ambition would be I want to be appreciated, loved, and accepted. So then the fears under that are unacceptable, unlovable, or ignored. Now, all these are reasonable requests, I mean, reasonable things. Like, we that would be great if the world would do that. But the fact is it's not what I come to after running through all of this. Is I don't need this from other people. I need that from a higher power. But not just any higher power, like, you know, the higher power of a gaggle of mean girls or something. I need it from the ultimate higher power, my loving mother, God, you know. And so, yeah, when I write all this down, I start to see, like, okay, I need, and it says I need something to be okay. I need people to accept and love me to be okay. And the fears under that are I'm afraid to be hurt, annihilated, outcasted, or disliked. And then, you know, it goes on from there. But basically, by going through all these seven areas of self, I get to see how the fears drive, well, first of all, the idea that everybody needs to be doing what I think they should be doing to be okay. I mean, that's really the liberation here. Because, like, if I turn this around, which my sponsor often had me to be like, I need God to be okay. You know, I need God to love and accept me to be okay. You know, I need God. I need to belong to God to be okay. I don't need to belong to people who come and go to ultimately be okay. That's liberating in itself, you know. And then, you know, to be able to see the fears and have them written out, and then later to get to go put them on the fear chart, which is something we do, which is so helpful to write later. I go back through all these inventories and write down that list, and then take each one of those fears all the way to the end, which usually in my case is the fear of just being alone in the outer edges of some universe with in the darkness with no one loving me and feeling lost or something. You know, that's my ultimate fear, you know, that usually runs to that far, you know. So, God, that's a lot to put on, you know, some kids in school, like that much of wanting well-being and wanting to belong. I mean, that kind of fear, like fear of being annihilated, I mean, that's a pretty heavy burden for some 11-year-olds to kind of be able to do, even if they wanted to, you know. So it's really God's work. And then being able to, yeah, then resolve those fears by taking them all the way to the end and the logic of fear, you know. And then coming over to the next page of the realization, you know, this was one of the most powerful parts for me, particularly when I think about being bullied and stuff, because self-pity is one of my drugs I like, although I didn't think I was a self-pitying person because I thought I was quite proud. But the fact is that I actually got a lot of, like, adrenaline hits off of feeling sorry. I mean, it sounds brutal to say feeling sorry for myself. I do think I did suffer a lot in this situation. I don't want to take it away from that kid, but the idea that I also had those things in me was really important for me to understand, because no human power is going to save me from the torments of, like, what ails me. And so to realize that, you know, I'm not an angel or anything like that. I didn't bully people in a general way, generally, but I did taunt a couple people in my school, which I did one of the amends. I have a second amends that I'm doing this week from elementary school, and the other one I did at the altar. And I judged, like, people who were normal, you know, straight people, normal people, people doing great in society. I judged them for many years, and I kind of excluded them from my life. Those are the ways that I kind of judged other people, and because of maybe I justify because I'd been hurt, then I just started to kind of exclude other people and judge people by their, and I'm not proud of that, but it's, you know, it's part of the thing of life. So when realizing that, it's like, okay, now I'm out of the self-pity mode and back into, like, they're human just like me. And then I write size stuff, you know, because these things or these people who had been kind of monsters chasing me all my life. I'm 47 years old, so let's say till I was 46, like, these monsters chasing me in one way or another came back to right size, you know. It's like some hurt kids who had some bad, you know, information or, you know, learning from the society did these things. I'm sure a lot of them regret it too, you know, and so then it becomes more right-sized, and even with a couple of the more abusive things that happened in my life, I was able to forgive and feel released through this process. So there's something about putting it down on paper, which I know anyone in here who's done it in any form, not even just in BBA, but if you've done, I did the steps before the fourth step in Al-Anon, and I had already had that experience. But there's some particular way that we do it in BBA that it just gets much more detailed and breaks it down in a way that, for me, helped me to go through the logic, to take it backwards also, to see like how the fears drive everything back up the page to the beginning, if that makes any sense. But so I'm going to go back to our big book and read from the bottom of 65. So we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. So there's this asterisk, which I really like here, which says, and I think it comes from the Big Book Awakening workbook, it says, the seven things in the third column are not the bad things. They are the things I have to get back. I have always given the power of these things to the people in the first column instead of God. So that's another way to say what I was saying before. Like the power goes back to where it should go, which is to my loving parent, God, you know. And God's the parent, I'm the child. And then, the first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. But to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got, which was my case. I've written whole things on it. I've read books about how this stuff is wrong, the way I was treated. But the usual outcome of that is that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. So I continued to actually, in my adult life, find different situations in which to be bullied. And the bullies could find something in me as well to kind of plug into, you know. So sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. And in my case, as a chaos creator, that soreness is one of my drugs. So, you know, the more we fought and we tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. I'll just read these last two paragraphs here, which is just, is it plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness? To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile?
And just your 5 minutes, Daniela, yeah.
So that's a great question to me, is like, did I squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? In my case, I do feel like I did, you know? And yet today, you know, I don't regret that. I see it's part of my spiritual journey. But I did have to grieve a little bit of some of the opportunities that maybe, you know, were lost in that, you know. But with the Al-Anon, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We have found that it's fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of adrenaline addiction, controlling, fixing, obsessing, chaos creation returns, and then we obsess again. And with us to use or to obsess or to drink for some is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal people, but for the controller, fixer, obsessor, these things are poison. So they are poisonous, and yet it's also the key to my liberation, you know, and to understanding the nature of being. I mean, that's for me another version of the spiritual journey besides liberation of all beings in all worlds would be knowing the nature of things, you know, the nature of the way things are. And so, yeah, sometimes it's terrible and sometimes it's beautiful and oftentimes it's a mix of those things, and that is life. But I also want to live, you know, and that's something my sponsor recently encouraged me to think about, would be to finally break this contract from wherever it comes from my childhood, from my parents, from my ancestors, I don't know, but this this obsession with death. It's like a contract with, do I want to live or not? So, I mean, the first time I thought of suicide, I was 7. The last time was probably 6 months ago, you know, considering it. Now, I've never tried it, so I don't know how close I've ever been, but it has been a constant thing for me, and it's tormented me. And it, you know, today it doesn't scare me in the same way, because I realize that, yeah, I want to live. And I want to live in a way that is what I've always wanted on some level, but I, as well as my convictions were, I couldn't live up to my moral standards, which is another thing I know a lot of us in these rooms suffer from, most of us probably, which is that I had these moral convictions galore, it says in the book, but I wasn't able to live up to them, which is being helpful to others in a true way, not in a controlling way of an Al-Anon, to get off the ladder of everybody's either below me or above me, get off the ladder and live life like on level with others, to be a worker among workers, to and to know the closeness with my creator, you know, and that's not something conceptual, and that's what I really appreciate, and that's what the fourth step really has to offer for me, is that I am of the educational variety. I'm not the type of person who's just like, because I mean, I believed in magic, and yeah, there's some God somewhere, but I didn't believe it really had anything of my day-to-day life, you know. And at this point, I have a very intimate thing that I can literally talk to this force and invite in and kind of go through to see what I'm willing to give. Because God wants everything, and God's reaching and looking for me. And it's more like my job, I find, is to kind of really look each day at my altar and in these resentments, like, what am I willing to give over to God? And there's always more things, because there's always me, there's a little part of me that's hiding in the corner with one part of my stuff thinking, okay, you can do all that stuff, like you can handle that, but I'm going to take care of like this thing over here, you know? And that's usually when I'm really suffering, because there's a certain loneliness in that, and it's an illusion, because the fact is, yeah, I can't control, well, what I like about the fourth step, it shows me, and I guess I'll leave it there, which is just that in the play of life, if God's the parent and I'm the child, I want their bigger view. If God's the director, I want their bigger view and scope of what's possible for my character of me. And usually I can only think of one or two choices, and God has a whole rainbow of possibilities. And my life is just so much better today, even though my circumstances during COVID hasn't changed that much. I honestly feel like 90% better, and it's just a continual thing, and it's so great, and I want everybody to be able to have a version of it. And then as a caveat, I want to say, I don't think this is that BBA or that the 12 steps or any one way is the way to God. Like, I think it's really important to remember that. Sometimes we get so excited about BBA, we say, okay, all these other programs aren't the real thing, like this is the real thing where we really know the big book. But everybody has their own way to it. I know people in ACA that are totally recovered and doing awesome. I know people in different programs, different spiritual things. But for me, I know that as a control fixer obsessor, this has been my main way to really release this malady that haunted me and I believe my ancestors for many generations. And I feel proud and happy to be on this path with all of you all. And I hope that something I said tonight was somewhat helpful, and I'm just, yeah, I'm grateful for everyone being here today. Thank you.
Oh, amazing. Thank you, Daniela. I'm just going to press record off, and then we'll carry on.